May proceed, Mr. Hansen.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present the petition for the court. The petition is relatively simple and short.
Weren't you just here?
Mm-hmm. This last week.
Right.
You were practicing for today.
That's right, yes. It's an honor to have the opportunity to come and speak before this court, and that's just sort of overwhelming to have it twice in 2 weeks. But
we'll have a chair name for you pretty soon.
I wouldn't go that far. The proposal here is that the court adopt the 2000 revisions to the federal rules of evidence pertaining to the authentication of business records held by non-government or non-public agencies. There are essentially three sections of the current rules of evidence that would be modified. The first is a relatively minor modification to existing 90803(6). And then there would be the creation of two new sections, 909(02)(12) and (13). The language proposed really does adopt almost entirely the language in the federal rules, which have been around, as I noted earlier, for about 5 years. Historically, as the court knows, it is required in a case where one is to bring business records into court that a evidence custodian or a record custodian be present to lay a foundation for the records. This rule would do away with that as a requirement and allow it to be done essentially by affidavit. As the court can tell from the form of the rules that would be in proposed sections 2 and 3, basically the affidavit would set forth the very things that ordinarily the foundational witness or the expert, I'm sorry, the evidence custodian would testify to in court. The rule requiring in-person appearance by a record custodian historically has worked fine because in most dealings, we're dealing with local people, we're dealing with individuals that are perhaps within the state. That's changed over time. In the course of commerce these days, we regularly deal with records that are held in other states, sometimes a great distance away. Sometimes even when dealing with corporations or entities that are local, seemingly local, we find that their records are actually stored off-site at a location some distance away. The current rule requires that if there's no stipulation to the admissibility of these records or to the foundation for these records, that we bring an evidence custodian in, and oftentimes it is from some distance. I am an assistant district attorney here in Dane County. My regular assignment is the prosecution of drug offenders, and there are many sorts of business records that are absolutely wonderful pieces of evidence in those cases. Cellular telephone records is the one that just jumps out right at me. It's powerful evidence.
Whose business? The drug dealer's business?
I suppose so, yes. The cellular telephone records do tend to be the, well, I get the first joke now.
Right.
The business records that I refer to would be those held by, for instance, a cellular telephone record company. Just to cite an example, Sprint, for instance, is located in Kansas City, Missouri. They'll testify. They'll come to Wisconsin and they'll testify, but they require payment. They require that their travel arrangements be made. Scheduling is oftentimes quite difficult. And in the end, they're really coming to say something that probably isn't substantially in dispute. And many times that's handled by stipulation so that we avoid those sort of problems. It isn't always. There are people who unfortunately sometimes recognize that the costs of litigation for the other side are such that it makes settlement of the case more likely, and I don't think that promotes access to the court that the court would like to have it promoted.
Counsel, you make reference to a big entity like Sprint. How large is your proposal to encompass in terms of entities that can do this without being present via affidavit?
Sure. That's a great question, and of course, through the publication process, that is the court publishing the rule, there's been statewide notice of the proposal. And I've heard some comments back. Many of them have been positive, saying, you know, it's about time we did something like this, essentially. But there have been two primary concerns. The first is that the face of the rule as it's proposed by myself fleshes out sort of this definition of business. I'm referring to Section 1 of the proposal, of the petition. And I think, well, I know that the reason that I included that expanded definition is because that was the definition in the federal rule.
But we're different than the federal rule, aren't we?
Well,
with regard to that, because we call it isn't, federally they talk about business records, but we talk about regularly conducted records of regularly conducted activities. So in Wisconsin, our focus is a bit different. Yes?
The wording is different, though. I don't know that there's a historical legacy in the state of the courts interpreting the provisions differently.
I don't think it has to. Does it necessarily have to be a business record as opposed, in Wisconsin, as opposed to a record of a regularly conducted activity?
Well, I think that when we refer to regularly conducted activity, we're really referring to the sort of things that are described as business records in the proposal. But where I was going to go with that, I guess, is to say that there has been concern raised about why are we monkeying with something that isn't broken in terms of the definitional differences between a business record or a regularly conducted activity record. And I respect that position. I think that makes a lot of sense. Why tinker with something that has worked in Wisconsin for a little over 30 years? And I certainly would consider it a friendly sort of amendment if the court were to take Section 1 of the proposal and simply forget about everything underlined other than the phrase, or by certification that complies with, et cetera. Certainly the point of the petition was the admissibility of these records by affidavit and was not intended to expand or otherwise change the definition of what a business record is or what a regularly conducted activity record is in Wisconsin.
I can't remember the case. I think it was maybe it was G. Heilman Brewing Company out of La Crosse. That dealt with regularly conducted activity records. And the foundational requirements for this exception include that the entry or condition of an event reported was made at or near the time of the event, number one. Number two, made by a person with knowledge. And sometimes those areas are subject to dispute and cross-examination. You know, maybe this entry in this piece of paper, and whether or not it was a regularly conducted activity, of course, is another foundational requirement. But sometimes those entries may be very, very important, but can be subject to cross-examination because the foundational requirement is met. Maybe the entry wasn't made at or near the time of the event, or maybe it wasn't made by a person with knowledge. So how do you get at those cross-examinations of the foundational requirement?
Well, in two ways. The first is that both sections 2 and 3, 2 simply refers to domestic records, 3 foreign, provide an opportunity for the opponent of the evidence, because it isn't necessarily an opponent, but the person who is not the proponent of the evidence, it calls for them to have the opportunity to challenge them in the court. That's the last sentence specifically of Section 2, and then there's similar language in Section 3. The second aspect of it is that if that process raised some sort of a legitimate question as to essentially the foundation, first of all, one would presume that the trial court would then not allow this procedure to be used, but the second is that if there was a situation where the court allowed it, but there still were some question marks up in the air, I would think then that the proponent of the evidence would choose to not use this rule. They, by virtue of learning about these question marks, they would then seek to actually bring in the person so that their case would be stronger by allowing those questions to be answered. Similarly, the non-proponent still has the opportunity to subpoena the records custodian themselves if they have these issues with those sort of matters.
Counsel,
yes,
I have a question regarding 909, the proposed amendments 90902, subs 12. And 13, and how they relate back to 90803 sub 6. The first question is, in the federal rules from which these rules are drafted and adapted, did the federal rules also provide for duplicate, or did they just provide for the originals?
I think that the federal rules with respect to essentially copies of documents are the same as that in the state, which is that a copy is essentially the same as the original. I think they're, the federal rules starting in the 900 series read similarly to the Wisconsin rules.
But, and the reason I ask is because when for the proposed amendments to, that would include subs 12 and 13, there seems to be a significant move for self-authentication from at least the way the statute, the remainder of 90902, reads, because this adds that element of duplicate. And given the technology that exists now, I mean, as I understand it, they're even making money on computers. I have some concerns when you're taking away the custodian, as these rules do, when you're having duplicates serving for self-authenticated documents as opposed to the originals. This seems to be a little movement away from the rest of 90902.
Well, I don't know that it is, and maybe I'm not understanding Your Honor's question the right way, but I guess when the way I read the currently existing 909, Chapter 909, it allows for basically a photocopy of an original record to be the same as an original for the purposes of admission if it's accurately photocopied. I think that the word duplicate on its face implies that this is an accurate copy of the original. I guess I would argue that if it were in some way altered or different, it wouldn't really be a duplicate. I think that the reason that duplicate is used in this context is to clarify that the original business records held in some filing cabinet someplace are not the actual items to be placed into evidence, because if that happened, the original holder of the business record would be deprived of those and the ability perhaps to even use them in other litigation.
Counsel, I have three issues. One,
any areas of concern or issues? I know in the last hearing.
Yeah, right. it's not going to matter to you in this one.
Okay.
One is this records of regularly conducted activity has come up in two cases. One has been decided. The other, I think, is pending. As to, at least in one, medical records and doctor's records of every time you come in, they're regularly conducted activity, and they also come under business, profession, as you defined it, occupation. Then the doctor is asked to file a report for workers' comp or a personal injury lawsuit as to, or group insurance was the Guillen case, as to evaluation of the patient. And I checked that out. It's not so clear that that's a regularly conducted activity when you file that report. So, and I checked the feds. So that's my first problem, but that's just general. Things are unclear, and I don't expect you to answer that.
I think I can, but...
Well, we have other cases pending, so let's not.
Okay.
Two, I think one of the most significant questions in evidence that needs to be addressed is electronic records and how they are produced and documented, et cetera, which you don't, I know this is narrow, but I'm just telling you that these are issues with me. Three, and this is the most focused for you, evidence affects every litigation, or even proposed litigation. And the courtroom is almost cleared out. The judicial counsel people aren't here. The bar people, well, we got one bar person here. So my question to you is, how, and you've indicated this has been widely circulated, but I want to know how widely, because as you heard the other presentation, the presenters in the bar are careful to explain how widely circulated and what kind of responses they got. That's what really worries me about this, because my sense is you should run this by the Judicial Council, the State Bar, litigation section, blah, blah, blah. So just respond really to my third comment.
Well, I know that every lawyer in the state received a copy in the Bar magazine.
No.
Which is, I also know it's fine print and it's in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And none of the lawyers care until it affects them personally at a particular point, whether it's during a case, before a case, paying bar dues or whatever.
I know specifically that the criminal law section of the Wisconsin Bar did look at this issue. They had a meeting, I can't recall exactly when, but within the last month or so, and they looked at this. There were people who weren't in favor of it. There were people who had concerns such as that, which I've raised already.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, what they discovered was they didn't have to take a position on it because it was too late to go through the hierarchy of the state bar to take an official position, given the scheduling of the hearing. I don't know, and this is my fault, I don't know to what extent this has been circulated through, for instance, the business
exactly.
Meeting.
Yeah.
And certainly if the court wished to hold the issue in abeyance, I would make efforts to make sure that people are specifically addressed.
Do you think that would be wise? And I would suggest, but maybe the court's ready to act on it today, so I don't want to bind you. I would suggest that you'd go to the State Bar, the Board of Governors, and they'd circulate it through their committees. I'd suggest you might go to various business groups like the Insurance Alliance. You might go to the District Attorney Association, Public Defender's Office. And I'm not even probably really hitting most of it. Maybe the Wisconsin Manufacturers, maybe the Medical Society has a view on its records. I just don't know. But it always concerns me when, and it concerns the court when, through no fault of your own, I mean, the court only requires publication. You did that, or we did that, and that's done. But how would you feel about that?
That's fine. I don't think, as was discussed during the last hearing, I don't think it ever hurts for us to have more information. We can always make better decisions with more information. Responding directly to the medical society aspect of things, we already have the rule as it relates to medical records.
Right. All right. There's a hospital record rule. I understand.
Right. And I don't think many of the, I guess I don't think that the world is falling apart by virtue of that rule. Things have worked pretty well in that regard. Justice Prosser, you looked like you were looking to ask
Hanson,
something.
I'm interested in how you came to file this petition. What prompted you to file this petition?
Well, the most direct, honest, and candid answer is as I indicated earlier, I prosecute drug offenses, and I got in the habit of regularly subpoenaing these business records and subpoenaing record custodians who have expressed both concern about having to make substantial trips across the country and sometimes from other countries. In the internet world, for instance, it's not at all unusual for records to be held in Canada. There are a lot of internet service providers in Canada. And then I work in the district attorney's office, and unfortunately with the budget times where they are, we can't necessarily afford to fly somebody here from someplace. So it's like, the answer is, practically speaking, I needed to do my job.
It's fair to say you don't formally represent the District Attorneys Association in this?
I do not.
Have you consulted with any evidence professors before you submitted this or after you submitted it?
Well, I know that as the criminal law section reviewed it, Professor Amira from Marquette did look at the proposal, and I think Professor Hammer as well, though. Don't hold me to the latter. I can't recall at this point, but it was reviewed by the evidence professors. They actually caught essentially the error, the drafting error that I made requiring the filing of the amended petition. The amended petition corrected an omission, a word processing omission, and a fairly important one with respect to 803/6, and that was what that was their response after reviewing it was, oops, I think you missed something here. You might want to amend that.
Now, this is a replication of federal rules amendments, is that right?
It is.
Do you know if any of those amendments have been subject to law review articles or any, substantial commentary?
I do have, I did look at ALR-type entries. I've also looked at cases that have analyzed those statutes. They were analyzed in the criminal context in a pre-Crawford framework. again, I practice criminal law, and everything we deal with these days is how do things fit in the Crawford analysis, of course. But it has been addressed in previous appellate cases. It is the rule is discussed in Weinstein's federal evidence treatise. I'm not aware specifically of law review articles or the like on this particular rule.
Happen to know whether any other states have altered their evidentiary rules to follow the federal model?
27. I did do a review of the evidence codes in each of the states, both myself looking at books, but also with the assistance of some individuals on the Internet who pointed out particular rules. And we came up with a total of 27 that had either this rule or something substantially similar. It, of course, also exists in the federal rules and in the uniform rules of evidence.
Did you say that in the petition, or did I?
I did not.
I haven't looked at the Judicial Council notes on this, but do you know why, in the course of your preparation, Wisconsin took a different route, and I don't know the answer, took a different route from the feds with regard to this, the federal still keeping business records and, all in the course of a regularly conducted business, and Wisconsin getting rid of it? Wisconsin statute, of course, doesn't make reference to business at all, just regularly conducted records. Do you know what the rationale was to depart from the feds?
Well, first, I note that I'm trying to back away from that as an issue, but I'm not actively proposing that the rule be changed to add the business aspect to it. I did.
Oh,
look,
okay. Yeah.
Right. I did look at the 1975. I think it was 75 when this court adopted the rules of evidence, and the court really made no statements, or at least in the notes, there were no statements as to the difference. It appears as though the phrase used in the Wisconsin rule is simply the phrase that had been used in case law prior, and they went with that rather than changing things, which I think strongly suggests that maybe now isn't a good time to change the language from regularly conducted activity to business record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Unless you have something else, Hanson, unless you have something else to say.
No, I don't. I think that the court has adequately addressed the issues that I had to bring to it. Thank you.
But could I, the 27 states, where is that located?
Which states?
Where would I go to get the 27 states?
The best way would probably be for me to supplement the record by submitting a list of the various provisions in the different states to the court.
Why don't you do that, counsel?
I can do that.
You can do it easily if it's a lot of work.
It's not.
Still. Okay.
It's not. In fact, I considered making copies of that, mm-hmm. and I simply wasn't sure of the procedure for distributing things in this forum.
No problem.
Would it be helpful to actually have copies of the rules in addition to the statutory references? Or
if you have them, yes. If not, we can use the Internet and pick them up, too. But if you have them, you ought to give it to us. Make our lives a bit easier.
I can do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Hanson. And we'll see if there are any other appearances for this provision or against this provision. Not hearing any. We want to thank you, Mr. Hanson. It's not usual that we get an individual taking it upon himself to draft a rule and do the extensive research you apparently have done in order to come here. So we do appreciate your effort in bringing this to our attention. That closes the hearing on 04-09, the matter of the amendment, the rules of evidence with stat sections 908-036, 909-212, 909-213, related to domestic and foreign records of regularly conducted activity. That closes both hearings of the day. I would hope that the court will use the time before lunch to come back and talk about these matters
right
now.
Yeah.
Okay? We will do that.
Not sure.
The table is set, I gather. All right.